Kensington gold mine owner Core Alaska is challenging a report by the Mine Safety and Health Administration that says management policies, procedures, and controls were inadequate at the time that Joseph Tagaban was killed last September. The MSHA investigation began at the mine almost immediately after the accident, which was the first fatality since the mine went into production 13 months before. The Kensington mine is about 45 miles northwest of Juneau. The four inspectors involved in the investigation issued their report yesterday. It indicates the area had not been adequately examined before setting off a blast, and a diamond drill hole intersecting the blast site had not been properly identified. Tagaban was killed when he was struck by rock and flying debris that shot through the 3-inch hole. According to the report, Tagaban was standing in line with the drill hole and about 200 feet away from the blast site at the 1,290-foot level underground. Core Alaska Community Relations Manager Jan Trigg says nothing is more important than worker safety, but she says the company disagrees with the report's conclusions.
Core had blasting and workplace examination policies and procedures in place at the time of the incident that were in full compliance with MSHA regulations. And an examination to check the area for hazards or to identify the diamond drill hole was conducted prior to initiating the blast.
The 30-year-old Tagaban from Juneau was a blaster's helper. The MSHA investigation indicates the mine worker initiating the blast and Tagaban had not been provided a safe area away from flying material or gases. Trigg says the company has identified a shelter to protect the crew working in areas where blasting is scheduled. She says Core has also increased workplace examination training. Tagaban had worked for the company for about a year and a half at the time of the accident. The investigator's review indicates that training was up to date, but did not specifically address all the hazards of blasting. The Federal Mining Agency says Core Alaska can request a conference to discuss disagreements with the investigation's findings. So far, no monetary sanctions have been assessed against the company. MSHA spokeswoman Amy Leviere says a separate division within MSHA will determine any penalty. She says several factors are considered, including the seriousness of the violation, any history of previous violations, and efforts to promptly correct the violation. It's been 2 weeks since the Spanish company Repsol suffered a blowout at an exploratory well on the North Slope. The company still doesn't have control of the well, and extreme weather is slowing that work. The well is no longer active, but environmental groups say harsh conditions that are hampering the cleanup operation prove how difficult it is to work in the Arctic. Annie Fite has more.
Workers on the drilling rig have been struggling with temperatures as low as minus 49 degrees and wind chills of minus 74. Kathy Forrester with the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission says equipment can't operate outside when it's that cold.
It's going very, very slowly because temperatures are just nasty cold. I think yesterday with the wind chill, it was minus 71 degrees Fahrenheit. And when it's that cold, you just can't do much.
Repsol has filed a plan to kill the well with the commission. Forrester says her team has reviewed that plan and is satisfied with it. But before they can kill the well, they need to finish steam thawing the massive amount of drilling mud that's frozen to the rig. Forrester doesn't have an estimate on when that process will be complete. She says it's frustrating it's taking so long, but the well is no longer dangerous.
It's not concerning to the ALGCC from a well control perspective because the well is dead now, and going slow isn't going to hurt anything. The only concern would be, from Repsol's perspective, that it's costing a lot of money.
Repsol won't put a dollar figure on how much it's costing. Jan Sieving is Vice President of Public Affairs for Repsol USA. She says it's been an arduous process trying to get the rig back in working order again.
So it's just a challenging environment up there between the remoteness and then the, you know, extreme cold temperatures. So I think we've been careful all along not to speculate as to when, you know, the well would be officially secured.
Environmental groups are concerned the company still hasn't been able to gain control of the well. Lois Epstein is an engineer who works for the Wilderness Society. She says the company should have been ready to deal more efficiently with the conditions they're encountering on the North Slope.
I almost think it's like a Homer Simpson question, you know, duh, it's cold on the North Slope. Everybody should have been prepared for that, prepared for freezing temperatures. And they are having trouble, from what I can see, in shutting down this well and killing the well because of the freezing temperatures.
Epstein says even though no gas is coming out of the well right now, that could change. Kathy Forrester with the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission calls that highly unlikely. Epstein says the broader question is how a similar scenario would play out offshore. Shell is planning to drill several exploratory wells in the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas this summer. She says a blowout there could be much worse.
If we weren't so lucky and there was ongoing gas or oil release, what are we going to do about the freezing temperatures that are seemingly preventing them from killing the well in a quick time frame?
Shell plans to work into October and will have to deal with freezing conditions. Epstein points out worker safety would be a bigger problem offshore, too. She says it's much harder to evacuate a rig that's leaking gas in the middle of the ocean. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
By the time Alaska's primary comes along, it's usually clear who's going to be the next presidential nominee. But this year, the race is close, and those Alaskan votes might hold more sway than usual. Dasha Eaton has more from Anchorage.
Alaska is known for its fierce individualism, and apparently that carries over to caucus time for the Republicans. Instead of holding a traditional caucus with debates and a bunch of other hoopla, Alaska Republicans get straight to the point with a preference poll and district conventions. It's as simple as this. During a four-hour period on Super Tuesday, March 6th, 4 to 8 p.m. Alaska Standard Time, Alaska Republicans will turn out across the state to vote for their preferred candidate. Four candidates are on the ballot: Mitt Romney, Newt Gingrich, Ron Paul, and Rick Santorum. Only registered Republicans can vote. The Alaska Division of Elections says there are a little less than 500,000 registered voters in the state. A few more than 131,000 are registered as Republican. 4 years ago, 13,703 people voted in the 2008 process. With no presidential primary election, Alaska is not considered a priority state for candidates, so there's been no in-person campaigning here so far. Romney sent his son to campaign for him in the Anchorage and Fairbanks areas in February. Romney has been endorsed by Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski and Lieutenant Governor Mead Treadwell, also a Republican. Oil and gas take center stage in Alaska politics, and Alaskans will be watching for cues on how presidential candidates view their development of those resources. In Anchorage, I'm Dasha Eaton.
Bob Bartholomew, the former chief operating officer of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation, will be the city and borough of Juneau's new finance director starting in June. Current finance director Craig Duncan made his long-expected retirement official yesterday, though he will remain on the job through May 31st to see the city through one more budget cycle. Bartholomew has held various jobs at the state, including 6 years as COO of the Permanent Fund and five as assistant director of the Department of Revenue's Tax Division. He recently spent 3 years under contract to the CBJ as project manager for a computer system upgrade and transition. Duncan has worked at the city for 30 years, the last 20 as finance director. He announced his intention to retire last fall. A large Seattle-based diversified seafood company says it has reached a preliminary agreement to acquire Snowpack Products. Icicle Seafood's president and CEO Dennis Gulke said his company is excited about the agreement with Snowpack, an independently owned and operated seafood processing company with operations in Alaska and Seattle. Terms were not disclosed. Snowpack operates a seafood processing plant in Dillingham and a seafood processing vessel. It has a significant presence in the Bristol Bay sockeye salmon fishery and also participates in herring and pink salmon fisheries. Icicle's Gulke says the transaction will allow his company to expand its operations through a modernized shore-based processing facility and an efficient vessel processor.